Canto 14. Compelled by love of home, I gathered in his scattered leaves for him, who spoke no word, his voice gone. We moved out. Now I begin to speak of where the second and the third zones meet, and where the fearful art is seen of justice. To show clearly these new things, I have to say we reached a plain swept clean of every plant, so that the dark wood rings a desert, as the sad moat rings the wood. Here at the edge's edge we paused. The ground was dry, deep sand, as where once strode and stood Cato in Africa, not to be bound by empire. Holy vengeance, how you must be feared by all who read what now I saw! Herd after herd of naked souls were just weeping the one lament, although the law by which they suffered differed. Some lay flat, face up, some sat knees high, and there were some who kept on moving. Those who moved like that were most in number, but were largely dumb compared with those who lay in pain. Pain turned their tongues loose. Over that great stretch of sand, slowly broad flakes of fire fell where they burned, as snow falls in the mountains when not fanned by any wind. Just as in India, when Alexander marched to that hot land, and saw his army, having come so far, assailed by falling flames that reached the ground unbroken, he told all his troops to tread the soil free of those fires which had been found to have, if not quenched, deadly fumes to spread, just so the eternal fire fell through the air, kindling the tinder sand like the flint spark to multiply the pain. Hands, in despair, unsleeping in their dance, hit first that mark, now this, as if they hoped to beat away the burning flakes. And I, my master, you, who overcome all things that say us nay, save stubborn imps who would not let us through the gate, name me that great one there who seems to think the fire means nothing, and in scorn lies scowling, as if these hot drops were dreams that could not melt him. He himself was torn from his aloofness by what he'd heard said by me about him. He cried, "What I was when living, I am now when I am dead. My fire within outdoes these flames, because, though Jove wear out the forge from which in rage he sees the deadly bolt that skewered me on that last day, though he should stage by stage wear down his crew to immobility, and that black forge on Etna, shouting, 'Help, good Vulcan, help!' as once on Phlegra's field, and try to shaft me with the victor's yelp, he'll not have vengeance, for I will not yield." My guide then spoke with force I had not heard from him before. "Capaneus, your pride undimmed brings you worse punishment. Absurd ravings like yours alone could match your tide of anger." Then, with gentler look and word, he turned to me again. "That was the king, one of the seven kings, who once laid siege to Thebes, and held God for a paltry thing, and still does. But to match his sacrilege he has, as I just told him, his sad bleat. Follow me now, and keep on walking near the wood, or else the sand will scorch your feet." In silence we approached a point where, fear still makes me shudder, gushes forth a small red stream. The Bulicame rivulet shared by Viterbo's harlots, one and all, is similar. So this creek's course was set across the sand. Its bed and banks were stone with footways alongside, from which I saw the passage. "Of all things you have been shown," my guide said, "since we entered by that door whose threshold is denied to none, you've seen nothing like this. This stream can cancel out all of the flames above it." These had been my leader's words, but what were they about? I begged him satisfy the appetite he'd given me. "Out in the sea lies Crete, a wasteland which once bathed in perfect light under its king. Mount Ida was replete when Saturn ruled, although he ruled by fright, with leaves and water which is now bereft of both, worn out. Queen Rhea hid her child for safety in the cradle of a cleft, and when he cried, she made the crowd go wild, to block off Saturn and his murderous theft. Inside the mountain, sits a grand old man. Back to Damietta, face to Rome, gaze fixed as to his mirror, head of fine gold, span of chest and arms pure silver, brass betwixt his breast and fork, choice iron from there down, except for his right foot made of baked clay, on which most weight rests. And save for his crown of gold, there is no part nor split display by tracks of tears which gather and descend by force into that cavern there, and take their course from rock to rock unto this end. They make the Acheron, the Styx, they make the Phlegethon, and here, where they are confined to this tight channel, and no further fall is possible, Cocytus forms. What kind of pond that is, you'll see, so all in all I'd rather skip that subject. But then I. You say this stream flows from our world, but here, and only here, is where we see it. Why? And he. It's not the trick it might appear. You know this place is circular, and you, although you have come far, veer left always as you go down, and have not yet turned through a full rotation. Let it not amaze you, then, if we encounter something new. No need to look stunned. I again. Where flow the Phlegethon and Lethe? On the one you're silent, and on the other, now I know, comes through this trough of tears. He. You have done me proud with all your questions, but the red and boiling river should have solved the first. Lethe, you'll see, when the repented dead, cleansed of the guilt with which they once were cursed, may bathe themselves, but far beyond this pit. And then he said, it's time to leave the wood behind. You must keep close now. Look to it. Untouched by falling fires, the only good paths are the margins. Any flame that nears dies in the rising mist of all these tears.